Okay, today is Wednesday, February 15th, 19th day of the month of Shvat. This is the women's Chumash. We're up to Bereshit, Perek Yud Gimel. Okay, Rabotai. I'd like to dedicate today's shir for two individuals. One is Eitan Blumen, who's been in and out of hospital recently. Eitan Eliezer ben Bracha Shira, Refuah Shleima. And on behalf of Lori Baumel and Debbie Teicher's brother, who had a kidney transplant just yesterday, Chaim Yehuda Halevi ben Chaya Breindel, also for a Refuah Shleima. Okay, we're in the middle of Perek Yud Gimel. However, I have one he'ara on that which we did previously. So as I always tell my kids in class, the reason why I'm doing this is to mess up your notes. So we don't have to go backwards. But I was reading an article by Rav Yitzchak Breuer, and he commented on the gifts that Avraham received from Paro, which we read, and he compared them to the gifts that Avraham received from Avimelech when the very same episode happened. It's part of a broader article where the Torah in Sefer Bereshit six times lists the wealth of one of the Avot. Six times it happens in Sefer Bereshit. And each time it's formulated a little differently, so he tries to put some significance as to why this time was formulated this way, why he only got sheep in this case, why did he get slaves in that one, why he got donkeys and camels in this one. I'm not going into that. I'm not into donkeys and camels. But this one had a very profound observation, and his interpretation of that observation is worth sharing. So, if you the point of departure will, of course, be Perek Yud Bet Pasuk Tet Zayin and Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Bet. It's Perek Yud Bet Pasuk Tet Zayin and Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Bet. So look at those two psukim, and I put in your mind what exactly Avram had received from Paro. From Paro. That is correct. It doesn't. But the Torah later tells us that he got Kesef and Zahav. That's why I asked you to look at that pasuk. Then you look at Perek Chaf Aleph of Sefer Bereshit in Parshat Vayera, where the episode with Avimelech is recorded. And you look specifically at Pasuk Yudalid, Perek Yud Pasuk Perek Chaf Aleph. It's actually Pasuk. It's Perek Chaf. It's Perek Chaf. It's a mistake in the text, in his writing. It's a mistake. The printer put made a mistake. It's Perek Chaf. And look specifically at Pasuk Yud Dalid. Perek Chaf Pasuk Vayikach Avimelech Tzonu Bakar Va'avadim Ushvachot Vayitain la Avraham, vayashev lo et eit sarah ishto. That's the point of departure, that there are apparently differences in what Paro gave versus what Avraham has, what Avimelech gave. So let's just read a little of the text, not all of it, which he points out a very critical difference. So it's on page one of the handouts, the first paragraph in the middle of the page. V'notar lanu od ladun b'she'ela she'sha'alnu la'el ha'rishimat ha'nechasim she'natan Avimelech l'Avraham. Still have to explain about the list of material things that was given from Avimelech to Avraham. Rishima zu lo ba'al l'ta'er et ha'rechush she'Avraham zachabo. The purpose of this list is not to identify Avraham's wealth. That is not the purpose. Ela et hamatana she'Avimelech natan lo. V'kashe lehavin al shumahi kolelet, and it's a little difficult to understand why it includes milvad sonu bakar, besides sheep and cattle, gam avadim ushvachot. Why did he also include in the gift male and female servants? Ulam rishimazu kashel lo rak mitzar hatochen. This question is applicable not only in relationship to the content, elagam mitzad halashon, the way to identify a slave also differs. Shaharize haklal hanoheg bechol haTorah kula biyachas lilushonot ama veshivcha. Here comes a rule concerning whether you identify somebody as an ama or you identify them as a shivcha. They translate it the exact same way. An ama is a woman who is a slave. A shivcha is a woman who is a slave. So why does the Torah use two different words? That's a good question. It's a good question. There's only one phrase for a male. Eved. That is correct. It's an excellent question. He doesn't deal with that question. So now his formula is Kol Parsha Hat Ktuva Dahan Hagat Shem Elohim. Whenever there is a pasuk in Tanakh in which God's name is referenced in that unit, and which of God's name is referenced? Elohim. When there, Amma is used. Always, Noketet Lashon Amma. V'chol Parsha Haktuva Behanhagat Shem Havaya. And any Parsha where God's name is used, Yudke Vavke, which we call Shem Havaya, Noketet Lashon Shivcha. It's an interesting observation. Uli inyanze ra'ui lehashvot et shtei haparshiot hamisaprot al yitziot hagar mibeit Avraham. And it would be interesting to note how the Torah describes Hagar being sent out from Avraham's household. Hasipur harishon ira behanagat shem avaya. The first episode describing Hagar is used, God's name of Shem Havaya is there. So look it up for a minute. Go to chapter 16 for just a moment. Perek Tet Zayin. Starting in Pasuk Bet. Perek Tet Zayin Bet. Atzorani Hashem Yudkei Vavkei Miledet. God has precluded me from having children. In Pasuk Vav. Pasuk Hey. Vateira ki harata vo'eikal be'eineha yishpot Hashem be'ni u'be'necha. Pasuk Zayin. Vayimtza'a mal'ach Hashem al ein hamidbar. Vayomar, pasuk chet, Hagar shifchat Sarai. So the name of God is used, and it always identifies Hagar as shifcha. That's the first time that she is asked to leave the house, because Sarai is jealous that she, Hagar, had a child, and Sarai continues to be Akara. Then there is a second time, which the Torah tells us in Parshat Vayera, when Yitzchak is born, and Sarah is upset that Yishmael is somehow having a negative influence on Yitzchak. And she asks Avram to get rid of her. And the phrase is, Garesh et ben ha'ama hazot. Get rid of the son of this slave. But it doesn't call her a shifcha. It calls her an ama. And Rav Roya points out, the name of God that appears in that particular unit, is in chapter 21, Psukim Tet, chapter 21 this time. Chapter 21. It's always Elohim. Vayivtach Elohim. Vayihi Elohim. Psukim 19 and 20. It's always Elohim. Pasuk Yud Bet, Vayomer Elohim, Vayishma Elohim et Kol Hana'ar. Now, ultimately, at least I didn't see it, he doesn't address why the difference between, what's the difference between an Amma and a Shivcha? He doesn't explain it. He makes that observation. But he does tell us why there is a change from Hashem to Elohim. So, in relationship to Paro and relationship to Avimelech, there are two different uses of God's name. In our story of Parshat Lech Lecha with Paro, the name of Havaya, Yud Kei Vav Kei, always appears in relationship to Paro's confrontation with Sarah. In relationship to Avimelech's story, the name Elohim always appears in the text. Always, without fail. And here he says the following. We're going to start with Avimelech. Let's look at a couple of psukim, and that'll help us crystallize his idea. So please go to chapter 20 for a moment. Go to chapter 20. And read Pasuk Dalid. Actually starting with Gimel. Avram comes to Eretz Plishtim. And he tells the same lousy story. Sarai is my sister. Very nice. Avimelech the king sends for her and takes her. Vayavo Elohim Avimelech bechalom halayla. Vayomer lo. Hincha meit al ha'isha asher lokachta. You're going to die on account of this woman. Vehi be'ulat bal. After all, she's already married. Va'avimelech lo karav eleha. He didn't touch her. Had no relations with her. Vayomar, and he said, Adonai, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hagoy Gam Tzadik Taharok? Are you going to kill me because I almost made a mistake? So now, every Tom, Dick, Harry, and Sam knows that Elohim represents Midat Hadin. So if the name Elohim is used in the context of Avimelech, what conclusion do you arrive at about God's understanding about Avimelech's predicament?
That God is judging.
That God, and what has he ruled?
That he's guilty.
No! He's ruled that he's innocent. Because he didn't do anything. He didn't touch her. He was going to. And what's the reason why he didn't fault him? What's the reason why he didn't fault him? Because Avram lied to him. He said, Achosi. Very simple. So if you look at Avimelech Alpidin, he doesn't deserve any punishment. None whatsoever. And indeed, he was not punished. He was not punished.
And why does it say Hamet? I mean, obviously he hasn't killed him, but why would Hashem even say you're going to die for this?
What?
Why does Hashem even say
he's warning him. If you touch her, if you... He said, he told her why I don't want you to touch her. V'hine b'ulat v'al. She's married. So HaKadosh Baruch...
If you touch her, if you go near her, then I'm going to kill you?
Yes. That's exactly what the Pasuk says. No sip, no if, buts, and what. Yes.
Was it... is there any significance to the fact that he gave Avimelech Neruah, that he actually came to him and spoke to him directly?
No, yes, there must be enormous significance for that. God doesn't do that for no. Apparently, Avimelech deserved to be protected and not to fall into a trap for which he would say, I did so not knowing. Not knowing. This is a principle which the Gemara mentions 1,000 times. And it starts with a donkey. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, if it's a donkey, well, of course it's going to apply to what? To you and me. The Gemara tells the story that the donkey of Pinchas ben Yair, one of the Tannaitic scholars, when he was brought grain to eat, he did not eat the grain if Trumot and Ma'asrot were not mentioned in the Gemara share. If Trumot and Ma'asrot were not taken from that grain. Now trust me, a donkey is allowed to eat grain without being mafresh trumas and maestras. He's allowed to. But he was such a holy donkey that he sensed, this donkey sensed, says the Gemara, if God will make sure that the donkey of a tzaddik doesn't consume something that is prohibited, certainly he will protect the innocent tzaddik of ever engaging what? In something that is prohibited. And the Gemara uses this to defend a practice which Rebbe, the author, the editor of the Mishnah, stated. Rebbe, the Gemara tells us in Chulin, that Rebbe heard that Rabbi Meir, ate vegetables in Beit She'an without being mafresh trumot to masrot. Rabbi Meir ate vegetables in Beit She'an without being mafresh trumot to masrot. Yes, how's that possible? Says the Gemara, Rabbi Meir apparently believed that Beit She'an was chutz la'aretz. Chutz la'aretz. Why is it chutz la'aretz? Because during the second conquest of the Mikdash by Ezra did not conquer all of the lands that had been initially conquered during Yehoshua's kibush and subsequent kibush of Eretz Yisrael. And there are some opinions that any piece of territory, at least for Truma and Maaseh purposes, is considered Chutz La'aretz. And as a result, the vegetable tithe, which is a derabanan in any event, even in Eretz Yisrael, you don't have to be mafresh vegetables, trumos and maaser vegetables, only for fruit and grain. So in Chutz La'aretz, the rabanan did not demand that you be mafresh trumos and maaser in Beit She'an. And Rebbe made an announcement and said, from now on, in all of Beit She'an, you don't have to be mafresh any trumos and maaser on vegetables. Rebbe made it public. In all of the territories which Yehoshua conquered, but Ezra did not conquer, you don't have to. You can eat vegetables without being mafresh trumas and maaser. So others challenged him and said, "What do you mean? Previous generations were mafresh. So why are you just changing the previous practice?" And the Gemara says, "Well, if what? If it was truly prohibited, God would never allow Rabbi Meir or Rebbe to eat something that is prohibited. God wouldn't allow it." Okay, it's a funny statement because what do you mean? Rabbi Meir can't have free choice? But somebody wanted to eat it. God wouldn't allow him to eat it. He would never allow a mistake to come about. He doesn't make mistakes. Yeah, he can eat it deliberately if he knows that it is. But to make a mistake, that he doesn't do. So this idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu protects the righteous and somehow guides them is a documented principle all over the place. And that's what happened to Avimelech. God senses that what? That Avimelech is innocent. He takes Sarai based on... This time her name is Sarah already. He takes Sarah based on the fact that she is his sister, Avram's sister. So he doesn't allow him to engage in anything wrong. Now let's go back to the statement. Let's go to the story back to Para. Now, and I want you to ignore, obliterate temporarily for the next 2 minutes anything that Rashi said in the name of the Medrash. Forget about it. Just read the text. And part of learning Tanakh is to learn what the text tells us before you look in Rashi. Before you look at the Ramban. What is the text telling us? Okay? So now, just reread to yourself, take 13 seconds, and tell me what impression do you get reading Psukim Tetvav, Tetzayin, and Yudzayin in Perek Yudbet? In Perek Yudbet. What impression do you get? Do you get the same impression reading Psukim Tetzayin, Yudzayin, Yudbet in Perek Yudbet? Do you get the same impression the way I just described what's happening in... What's happening in by Avimelech? Do you get the same impression?
No.
Tell me why. You don't get the same impression. What? Yeah. Does it say any place that he didn't have relations with her? No. Who claimed that she never had relations? Rashi said that. And who prevented it? A malach. There was a malach who protected Sarai as Paro was making his advances. A malach came and said, no. Because Sarai said, hit her. Remember that man? So I said, right, I'll devour Sarai Yeshit Avram. I'll devour, says the Medrash. Sarai said, hit her before he talks. Okay, that's a nice Medrash. The text doesn't indicate that. Why? Because if you're looking at Al-Pidin, he's guilty. And that's why Vayinaga Hashem et Paro. He's guilty having had relations with her. What do you mean? What do you mean he's guilty? After all, Paro also had information that what? Sarai was what?
The sister.
So why is he so innocent? And why is he guilty? Even if he had relations with her, why is he guilty? Suggests Rabbi Breuer, that's why the name Elohim does not appear in the scene. Because if you were to look at Paro based on absolute justice, he's just as innocent as Avimelech was, despite the fact that he had relations with her. Why? Why? Because it was a mistake. He operated based on false information. So what name is employed here? Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, which indicates a much different relationship between the person and God, who happens to be the subject. In our case, when God uses the name El Hashem with us, we look at it as God being a little more kind-hearted, based on chesed, he overlooks things. But overall, says Rav Roya, his point is, it focuses on a more personal connection than an objective judge. Objective judge just looks at the facts. But if you have a relationship with somebody, you come to decisions not based on the cold, dry facts. Not everything is black on white. Not everything. There are shades of gray quite often that dictate and determine our response. And God's response to Paro was, technically, you might be right. But what lesson are you now setting as the king of Mitzrayim? as the king of Mitzrayim. A lady walks in into your town, and 5 minutes later, you're snatching her away. One second. Just say what he says. You don't have to agree with him. A lady walks in, and what's the first question that you ask her? Who are you? Are you married? Are you an assistant? Is that the way in which a leader of a nation is supposed to conduct himself? Absolutely not. And hence, because of the fact that I expect a little more of you, Paro, as a leader of Mitzrayim, somebody who considered himself a god. And that's documented all over the text, that Paro considered himself a god. Why is he dreaming in Parshat Miketz, V'hinei Omeid al Hayor? Why is he standing by the Nile in his dream? Everybody, that's the Sabuk Shah. Because he believes that the benefits of the Nile, that what? That supplying Egyptian water, a lot, on his account. That's the Sabuk Shah. The Medrash says, because he wanted to be like a god, and he didn't want to acknowledge he had to go to the bathroom. So he only went to the bathroom at the Nile, not in his palace, because then everybody would know he's not a god. Gods don't go to the bathroom. That's the Medrash. Simple pshat is because he perceives himself as being responsible for the source of life in Egypt, which is the Nile River, the Ya'or. That's why he says, V'hinei al-Med al-Ya'or. That's why he pictures himself during the dream. So if you perceive yourself in such a fashion, I, God, the real God, have greater expectations from you. And hence, even though from a legal perspective you might be innocent, I'm not approaching you as a legal judge. I'm not using the word Elohim here. I'm using the name Hashem, which indicates that there is some further relationship, which I am claiming. Yeah, Paro, you're one of gods. You say you're one of gods. You're more in my class. So I want to talk to you as such. And as a result, God punishes him, holds him to a higher level of expectation, even though from a legal perspective, he was just as innocent as Avimelech. Just as innocent as Avimelech. So then Breuer tries to use this to explain why Paro decides to heap bundles and bundles of wealth upon Avram, and Avimelech only what? Only gives him what? Sonu Bakar and a couple of slaves, but he doesn't give him Gimalim, he doesn't give him Kesef Zahav. Why? Because Paro perhaps learned his lesson, and he wanted to make up in God's eyes, and said, oh, you can treat me a little differently? I'm going to make it up to Avram as a leader. I'm not just going to pay him for the suffering that his wife may have suffered. I'm not going to go way above and beyond that. Avimelech, who felt that, you know what, I'm in the right. I did nothing wrong. Why God didn't have greater expectations from Avimelech, I have no idea. He doesn't explain that. I don't know. But what's interesting to me is the observation that Hashem is always used in our chapter, and Elohim is always used in that chapter. And that's got to be significant. Whatever you say, you don't like his explanation, that's okay. But to make the observation, that is significant. Yes?
Just one question.
Go right ahead.
Ted Zion, it actually says that
Avimelech
gave 1,000 pieces of silver to Abraham.
Okay, that's true. It does say that.
Sorry.
That's a good question. He actually deals with that also.
Okay.
That he says that was not to Abraham, that was intended for Sarah, because he made her suffer. Okay, but it's a good question. An excellent question. Yes. Yeah.
Why do you assume that he slept with her? Couldn't it just be that he was? Since he was, punished, couldn't it be just his conduct was so rotten that he was punished for just snatching her up, as he said?
It is possible. I'm not saying it's not. So why did he punish Paro and not Avimelech? Why did he interfere with Avimelech?
Avimelech maybe was more righteous. He deserved a new reward.
It could be. It could be. I don't know. His feeling is that when it says Vatukacha Isha Beit Paro and then Vayinaga Hashem, it was on account of the fact that he violated her. And that's the simple reading. Yeah.
So I'm having a hard time grasping the concept that Sarah actually was violated in the Paro story and not in the Avimelech.
That is correct. In the Avimelech, it says black on blue that she was not. Here it doesn't say black on blue, but it appears the flow, claims Breuer, seems to indicate that it took place. And that's why Rashi doesn't want it to happen. Rashi doesn't want to be that. Rashi is the ultimate protector of the Avot and the Imahot. He doesn't want that shame to be associated with her, and therefore he introduces the Midrash, oh no, the Malach was protecting her. Because Rashi can't tolerate that. Yeah.
So if he gets this illness only after he's been with her, takes a little bit away some of the concept of being protected. I mean, like, you're kind of wondering, like, well, if you were already, God's already given her an illness, why not before?
Yeah. So yeah, exactly.
It takes some of it away.
Correct. You're right. I grant you that. Yeah. Yeah.
I like how the definition of Elohim is also broadened a little bit. You know, I think we're accustomed to thinking when we see Elohim in judgment, we think of a negative outcome. And here you're suggesting that with Avimelech, there was judgment but a positive outcome.
Correct.
Which is not an intuitive.
No, but if it means a judge, I mean judgment,
right.
Sometimes you walk out victorious in court.
Right.
We all hope that's what happens on Yom Kippur.
I know.
We are standing in the presence of the judge.
Name,
correct.
It's implying negativity.
I don't know if I would go that far.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, after 120, we all go to the king in front of the judge and we hope that we're winding up in Gan Eden. We hope. Sometimes you emerge victorious in judgment. You just got to prove your case. Got to be a good lawyer. Yes.
I wonder if, since none of us like to feel that Sarah was violated, Paro could be guilty and deserve punishment because he suspected, he decided not to know she was married, which would parallel later not knowing Yosef.
Good, very creative. That's very possible. That might be the right shot. We don't know. Like I said last week, if you don't know, you can fill in the blanks. That's what we're told to do. Fill in the blanks. Yours is just as good as anybody else's. Yeah. Write it down. You print them safer, and it will help you while you farm sale next year. Yes.
But later on, when Rashi quotes when they're making the mishpeh on the words "Hinei Kavah named Sarah," he says that you know that they were worried that people would accuse that she'd be violated.
Correct.
So it's strange. It's Rashi that's saying that.
That Rashi is saying what people would have said. Hinei Kavah named Sarah. That Abimelech impregnated her. That's correct.
From Abimelech? I thought that was from Abimelech.
What?
So that's from Abimelech where it's straight.
Correct.
It's not.
That's correct. It's the same thing at the beginning of Parshas Tovos. Eile toldot Yitzchak ben Avraham. Avraham holidit Yitzchak. So Rashi says the same thing. People were saying that what? May Abimelech meet Abra Sarah. People were saying it. It never happened. Yeah.
Question why he tried the ruse again, but call the Homer if she was violated by Paro, why he would take the chance with Abimelech and try again to say she's my sister.
It just, that's an excellent point. That's an excellent point.
Yeah.
Why would I and even if she wasn't violated,
well, said,
even if she was violated, what's running through Avraham's mind? We will deal with it. The Ramban asks that question because he is not afraid to criticize. It's a perfect question. You just saw what happened to your wife. What, are you repeating the same story again? What, are you ripped? Yeah. Yes. Okay. Let's move on now. We are now in Perek Yud Gimel, and we are up to Pasuk. We'll start again, hey, just for a second, and we'll read the four psukim, three or four psukim, and then, as usual, see what Rashi says and the Ramban, so on and so forth. Pasuk hey in Perek Yud Gimel. V'gam l'lot ha'holechet Avram ha'yatzonu bakar v'oholim. Lot, who traveled with Avram, had sheep and cattle and many tents. The land couldn't accommodate both of them. By he riv, bein ro'ei miknei Avram, ubein ro'ei miknei Lot, v'hakenani, v'haperizi, az yoshev v'aretz. And the Kenani and the Perizi were living then in the land. That particular phrase is the most troublesome to all Parshanim. Why does the Torah throw that in right here and now? And there are a variety of responses. We, of course, start with Rashi. Say Rashi. Pasuk Zayin. In Vav, he doesn't add much at all. Vayehi Riv. There was a quarrel. Lefi Shahayu Ro'im Shelot Rishaim. Umar, the shepherds of Lot were unethical, immoral guys. Umarim behemtam bisadot achirim. They allowed their cattle to graze in other people's fields. The roe Avram and Avram shepherds mochichim otam al hagezel, and would rebuke them that you guys are engaged in theft. The Haim Omrim, and their response was, Nitna ha'aretz la'avram. The land has already been given to Avram. God himself told Avram, and Lot must have heard it too, that you're going to inherit this land. Velo ein yoresh. And Lot knew that what? Avram didn't have anybody to inherit his estate. Velot ben Achiv Yorsho ve'ein zegezer. His nephew is his closest living relative, which is the halacha. If you don't have a child, then the closest living relative does inherit you. Ve'ein zegezer. V'hakatuv omer. Therefore, the pasuk says, V'haknani v'haprizi yoshev ba'aretz. Velo zacha ba'avram adayin. Avram had not yet taken stock of the land, had taken hold of the land. Hence, it is still theft. And therefore, the shepherds were quarreling that they were being rebuked for what? For steal, for theft. That's how Rashi learns what's happening here. However, take the Ramban. It is on page 4 of the handout. Starts on page 4. But before you look at the Ramban, take a look at the Chizkuni right below. He says, let's read it for a second. The quarrel was between the shepherds of Avram and the shepherds of Lot. Velo haya biyadam laharchiv min komam lemireh miknehem. They had no other land to move to. You know why they had no other land to move to? Because haknani v'haprizi az yoshev ba'aretz. Because all the other land was already occupied by the current residents. So there was no place to move, no place to budge. If they wanted to budge, so therefore they had to compete for the same area of grazing land. So the phrase v'haknani az has nothing to do with the legal ownership. It's stated here as a practical reason why they couldn't move to the right or to the left. Why? Because the Perizi and the Kenani were there. Perizi and the Kenani. That's Chizkus. The Ramban says, Vayhiriv, at the beginning, he just quotes what Rashi says. Go down to the next line for the bottom, the last line before the end. Umedrash Rabboseinuhu. What Rashi quoted was a medrash, like he always does, quotes a medrash. Va'ani tama, ich bin perplexed. I'm puzzled. This is Bamira Vunda, I'm perplexed. Why? Ki hamatana shene emra le Avram lizaroi hoita. Avram was never promised the land. It always says, Shene emar lemala, lizaracha etena ta'aretz hazot. Page 5. Veheich yirashenu Lot. How could Lot and his shepherds come to the conclusion that they are going to inherit the land from Avram? Even if Avram will never have any children, and Lot is his legal heir, it can't include Eretz Canaan. Why? Because it hasn't been given to him. You can only inherit that which you own. That is inherited to your descendants. But that which you don't own is not inherited to your descendants. Is not inherited to your descendants. And in fact, this is borne out in halakha as well. Born out in halakha. Let's assume a father had a debtor. Father had a debtor. Okay. And the father died. Now the debtor passes on a piece of property in payment of the loan. Payment of the loan. So, for example, the Bechor does not get a double lot from that inheritance. Does not. Why? Because he only gets a double lot of what? The property that is under the control of the father at the time when he dies. Something that's not in his control now is not subject to the laws of inheritance. Not subject. So therefore, Esther Ramban, Vehechi Roshenu Lot, Ulai, perhaps, Shamu Haroim Hamatana Vita'u. Maybe the shepherds heard about the gift, and they made a mistake, thinking that it wasn't that God had promised the children of Avram, but what did they think? God promised it to Avram. The Hakatuv Omer, Ki Gam Lilot, Gam Li Avraham, Einena Ata. That right, not only to Avram, but to Lot as well, it still doesn't belong to them. Ulefize Masha Omar Tchila Kihaya Rechusham Rav, that which the Torah reports in a pasuk earlier, that why couldn't they sit together? Because they had an abundance of land, too much. Lemor ki mipnei haruchusham harav lo yisa otam haaretz. Because they had so much, the land couldn't accommodate them. V'huch tzrechu roei lot lahachnis miknehem besadot shiyesh lohem ba'alim. And the shepherds of Lot had to bring their cattle in lands that were previously owned. Vizot sibata meriva. This is the cause of the meriva. That's perhaps explaining what Rashi had in mind. V'alderech hapshat, but the simple pshat is, haita hameriva al hamireh. Kilo nasa otam haaretz. V'kasher haya mikne Avram ro'eh be'achu, when the shepherds of Ram were pasturing Mazeh Ba'achu in the swamp. It's in Parshas Miketzer as well. The parot came out, Vatir Ena, they were grazing Ba'achu. Kilana Saha'o Tamaretz. V'kasheh haya mikne Avram Ba'achu, hayaroe lot ba'im bigvulam v'roim sham. V'hine Avram v'lot hayagarim v'toshavim ba'aretz. Avram and Lot were residents of the land. Upachad Avram, and Avram was worried. Pen Yishama, go to page number 6. Haknizi v'hafrizi yoshev ha'aretz, koveit miknehem. If the residents of the land, the Knizi and the Kanani, will hear what? About the argument. What will they know is the source of the argument? They're loaded. Oh, we have residents who are loaded. What are we, the Knani, the Parisi, going to do?
Kill them.
We will oyak vayigorshum. Either what? They will drive them away. Oyaku otam lefi charav, or will kill them by the way of the sword. Vayikhu lahem miknehem uruchusham. Ki yeshivata aretz ata lahem lo le'avram. Because dwelling in this land at this time was reserved for them and not for Avram. Now, does anybody remember an episode later on with one of the other patriarchs who was worried about what the people are going to say after some of his children did something? Who was it?
Shimon
and Levi. Yaakov said, what?
You made me hateful.
Correct. You caused me to be hated in the eyes of the residents because you overreacted. Lahavisheni biyoshvei haaretz. So the avot were concerned what their neighbors were saying about them. And the fact that we're fighting is only going to highlight the fact that we are loaded with cattle, and therefore what's going to come about is one of two consequences. Either they're going to drive us away, or number two, worse yet, they're going to kill us and take all of our possessions. So the controversy, says the Rambam, it's nothing to do with the Medrash that they were stealing and Avram rebuked them on Gezel, nothing to do with that. You know what the controversy is? Ki hayu ruchusham rav. They had lots of money. V'haknani v'haprizi az yoshei baret. And that they were there, and as a result, I'm worried about the reaction of the Knani and the Prizi to the fact that I am loaded. Kacha lomeid haramban. Now, the Kli Yakar makes an interesting observation on the Ramban and says, I don't really have a good answer for this, but his observation is a good one. I want you to compare our Pasuk, Yud Gimel Pasuk Zayin, with Yud Bet Pasuk Vav. Yud Bet Vav with our Pasuk Zayin. And tell me two differences that appear in the text. The Kli Yakar raises it, and he... not quite sure what he was trying to drive. Good. In the previous context, when we want to document that this land does not yet belong to Avram, the Torah says, "Bahaknani az ba'aretz." Then here it says, "Bahaknani v'haprizi az what else? Yoshei ba'aretz." Why does it have the word "and"? It's obviously that they've left. "Bahaknani v'haprizi az ba'aretz." I know that they are Yishmin. And in the previous text, it didn't find it necessary to say "Bahaknani." As Yoshei Ba'aretz. So Kli Yakar raises that question, and it's a good question. Yes?
Maybe it's there because if there's a question, why would God send them? In other words, you can understand where Lot's servants came to that conclusion, because Avram was sent there by Hashem. So if it says Yoshei, then it indicates it's not, you know, why would Hashem send Avram to that land if they're Canaanim already there?
So why didn't he say Yoshei there?
But you could...
when God sent them there, it's Canaan.
Okay.
So what he says, Kli Yakar, he suggests that that the Prazim, the Prizis, were the nation that generated more fear than the Canaanim did. Because later on in Sefer Dvarim, we are told that the most powerful nation of the Shiva Amamin, who were there in the time, the seven the countries that reside in land, the Prazi was the strongest nation in the world, was the strongest nation. And the word Prazi gives it away. Gives it away. What does the word Prazi, will recite in Emet Hashem in 5 weeks when we read the Megillah? Al kein ha-Yehudim Hayoshvim Ba'arei HaKrazot Osim Et Yom Ha'arba Asar Et Yom Chamisha Asar Mishka V'simcha Mishloach Merot Yisrael. So what does Prazim mean? Present. Now just the opposite. Open. Prazim means open. Rashi comments on the spot, and he's right, because he finds it in Parsha Shlach, that if you are walled in, what does that indicate about the nature of the residents? They're weaklings. They're afraid. Therefore, in order to repel an attacker, you have to have solid walls. If you are inherently militarily strong, you don't have to waste your time building walls. Your mere presence can keep them out. Keep them out. So the Prazi, their characteristic was they lived in cities that were open all the time. No walls around them. Indicating to Avram that I'm really scared of these guys. They're very powerful. The Kanani, I'm not so scared because they have walls around their cities. Walls around their cities. And in fact, just as an aside, just as I can use this at the Si'udah for Purim, you can write it down, put it, say it at the Suda. The first time that the Torah, that the Megillah, quotes this pasuk, it only says that they observe this as a mishta v'simcha u'mishloach manot ish l'rei. Doesn't say anything about matanot levyonim. Then, the next year, when Mordechai established it as a yom tov for all future generations, it says that they made these days Mishav HaSimcha, Mishloach Manot, and Matanot Le'evyoni. And the Rav commented that the key was Al Kain HaYudim HaYoshvim Ba'arei HaPrazot. But to just the opposite way, namely, the fortified cities didn't observe Purim the first year. You know why? They felt they weren't in danger. What prompted their danger? What prompted the Prazot danger? How you measure? The fact that they were open and subject to attack. But the cities that were well fortified, they didn't feel any danger from Haman's threats. And therefore they never observed Purim. Only Al Kain HaYehudim HaYoshvim Bi'Arei HaPrazot Osim Et Yom Ha'arba Asar Et Yom Chamisha Asar Mishav HaSimcha. So Mordechai felt that even if it was true, they should have observed Purim as well. Why? Because if there is a potential danger to one member of Am Yisrael, every member has to buy in. Every member has to buy in. And therefore he selected the mitzvah of tzedakah to rectify that failed feeling. And the Rav made this following correct observation. By every single mitzvah, which is Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, what word does the Torah use to explain me and my friend? What word does the Torah use? Re'ehu. Lo sa'aneh bire'acho eit shoker. Don't offer false tentative. This week's parsha, ninth commandment. Lo sa'aneh bire'ach. Ki yigof ish et shor re'ehu. If your ox gores the ox of your friend. It's all v'ahavta l're'ach atamoch. Except for the mitzvah of tzedakah. In Parshat Behar, chapter 25 of Sefer Vayikra, the Torah tells us, ki yamuch achicha. Doesn't say ki yamuch re'acha. If your brother will be destitute, what are you supposed to do? Vehechazakta bo. You're supposed to help him out. Get him a job, lend him some money, give him money, help provisions for him. Why? Because when it comes to your brother, we hope, you will respond much more aggressively than for a casual friend. He's your flesh and blood. So the Torah tells us in relationship to the mitzvah of tzedakah that every member of Am Yisrael should be identified as a member of your flesh and blood. Hence, your obligation is much greater. That's why Mordechai, in trying to correct the defect, he selects the mitzvah of tzedakah, matanot le'evyonim, because that mitzvah highlights the relationship that ought to have existed, and if one brother of yours is in potential danger and has been spared because of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's miracle, it's good cause for celebration for you as well. And that's why in subsequent years, when Mordechai establishes Purim as a Yom of Lidorot, he doesn't only emulate the original practice of Mishnah, Besimcha, and Mishloach Manot, but he adds Matanot Le'Avionim based on this notion of the difference between Re'acha and Achicha. So that's what Kli Yakar says, commenting on the Ramban. All right, we'll stop here and we'll continue with Avram's proposal for Lot to separate.
If you're comparing Abimelech and Paro, by Abimelech it's active, it says fit.